You're listening to Munch, a podcast and website where we pair meals with movies. I'm Ben.
I'm Andre.
I'm Leanna.
And this week, we are here for Andre's birthday super munch. It is that time of year again. Party hardy. We just watched Inglourious Basterds.
We sure did.
Yes, we did.
Plenty of Nazi scalping. Nazi scalping.
More than I've seen in any other movie. More scalping.
There's a fair bit of scalping.
Also more Nazis than I see in most movies.
That's also fair.
Yeah. You should go back and watch Indiana Jones. There's a lot of Nazis in that one.
Oh, I've seen that one.
A lot of okay. Nazi beating up too, which is like always a positive.
Yeah.
We're coming out against Nazis. Surprise, surprise to no one.
We like to take a firm no Nazi stance here at Munch. So in honor of taking a firm no Nazi stance, Andre, do you want to hit us on why you chose Inglourious Basterds as your birthday super munch?
I had a very long list of movies I wanted to watch.
You did.
A little bit of like option paralysis?
Yeah, it took me a while.
Ooh,
that and was we had a bit of a discussion about what would be the best one to watch, and I feel like we kind of all came to this one together.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, like based off of a variety of like criteria issues with certain movies, we wanted to save certain movies. Some people hadn't seen this film, which makes it a little
that
more
was
interesting.
Me. I was the one that had not seen it.
Yes, that was specifically you. So I really like Quentin Tarantino. I have seen many of his movies many times.
Can you tell us why you like him?
Yeah. What a loaded way to phrase that question. But I
we
totally,
can come back to it. But yeah. I think
no,
you
I
should
can,
tell
I can,
us.
I'll go into it.
No, I think it would be great to hear as well.
He's like Wes Anderson in that his shots have such a distinct, like, intentional look to them. Maybe not as exaggerated as Wes Anderson with, like, the perfect symmetry all the time, but...
On occasion, though, he dabbles in that.
Yes, he does. In Inglourious Basterds, there was a lot of, like, you could... The film really had a look. And we say that a lot of times about movies that have a bad look. But this one, it was really impressive. Like, a lot of the dialogue, it was always side profiles of two people talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And instead of cutting between people in conversations, it would be a steady shot of, like, two people talking directly at each other, both in frame. Which I felt added to the tension, just like in an action movie where the action takes place over one extended scene, you feel more tension. I feel in these intense conversations, when we're not cutting between different viewpoints, it's super intense, very claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm. And also I think to that point, Tarantino gives those scenes time to develop. He will sit on a take for a decent amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
And just like with a static shot focused on those two people, like just let it play out, which adds some length to the film because there's a lot of like, I think stylistically, he also has a format where he's like, as a character trait, oh, tell me what you have been hearing as a way to both like build out the story for the audience
mm-hmm.
while also building on more on what that character is interested in.
Yeah. So he's like cinematography as talented as Wes Anderson. As far as writing goes, because he writes his own movies, just as good as Aaron Sorkin in my book. Like he's got that same kind of quick, witty banter. His whole movies are conversations between people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing. That and building suspense. And then that's the final thing. Like in all of his movies, it's all about suspense. I think he does a really good job of building suspense, like evoking that emotion out of his audience.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately,
leading to a release of some sort.
Which yes, he, right.
In the case of Tarantino,
is usually violence, yep. Blood, like a comical amount of blood and violence.
Yeah.
Which is, I could take or leave it, but that's like, that's his thing. So I get
it.
Like, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah.
At least he's got a thing. Like he's got some style where there's plenty of directors where you don't know their names. You wouldn't be able to put two of their movies together on your own unless you were on IMDb. And he's, to me, he feels like the most accessible. He's either the most accessible of the art directors or the most, he's the most artistic of the mainstream directors, or he's the most accessible of the art directors. He's like, he kind of walks that line.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely something that you should watch. Like, whether or not you end up liking his films, I think his films are still worth watching to understand whether or not you like him. And then from there, you either know you'll like a Quentin Tarantino film or not.
Mm-hmm.
It is rare that something is going to hit you really differently from one Tarantino film to the next.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong here, but Liana, I believe we've watched a few Tarantino movies now. And if I remember correctly, you disliked Inglourious Basterds, disliked Pulp Fiction, liked Kill Bill. Is that right?
To be totally honest, Kill Bill and Pulp Fiction didn't really leave lasting impressions on me.
That is surprising. Okay.
I couldn't tell you much about either if you pressed me.
Okay. I'm going to press you. Do you remember liking or disliking either of them?
When did you watch Kill Bill last?
We watched them both pretty close together, and it would have been a couple of years ago. It was
okay.
Back in our old apartment, so at least a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But
it's not too long ago.
I think I remember more of Kill Bill, and I liked it in the sense that it followed a female character who had just an epic revenge saga. Mm-hmm. And so that was more satisfying to watch than I think the other films I've watched by Tarantino.
Sure.
I feel like there's something about Kill Bill where there's almost an element of the supernatural in a weird sense.
It's almost like a comic book at times.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it allows you to enter into his world of violence a little easier than where if you are dealing with kind of Nazis or in Django Unchained, kind of the South and things like that. And even in Hateful Eight, there's not the same sense of that supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could definitely see Kill Bill being somewhat of an outlier for people. Like,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, because
I could see that.
You're totally right. She seems like a comic book hero, Uma Thurman.
And the action scenes, like, I remember in that she cuts someone's arm off and it sprays out like a shower head, which is like something you would see in a comic book.
Yeah.
Like it's so over. The
yes.
Violence at that point is so over the top.
You know it's intentional.
Yeah.
Where you have to know that it's intentional.
But again, pressed for details, I couldn't tell you much about the plot other than like Uma Thurman murders a lot of people with a sword.
Yeah.
And in Pulp Fiction, the only thing I really remember is they go to like a diner.
Yeah.
And then there's a really kind of awkward dance scene. And that's like most of what I remember from that movie. I don't remember anything about what it's about, to be totally honest.
I mean, it's not a bad. It's hard to tell you what it's about.
Like, there's not necessarily a clear storyline from like here to here to here that like is going to be as satisfying. It's more the experience of it.
Kill Bill's really the only one that has like a really. This is the main character. This is her story arc. Where I feel like the other ones are more a collection of short stories.
And that's not to say Tarantino's not good at, like, resolving an arc or having an arc.
Mm-hmm.
It is just not done in, like, a typical story fashion of, like, setting up everything with exposition. Here it is. Here's the rising climax. He has more kind of like these brief moments ultimately fleshing out a larger arc.
Oh yeah, totally punctuated by he does this chapter thing. It's also one of his signature moves. It's like tells these movies in big chapters, and it feels very, it's like reading a book. Like Usually when you're watching a movie, you're jumping between characters so quickly, you're not as conscious about it. Where in a Tarantino movie, it's like, this is the Han scene. This is the Brad Pitt scene. So yeah, that's what I like about Tarantino.
Nice. So to set that up and to set up what our meal was.
Oh, and then, sorry, why did I pick Inglourious Basterds? We were talking about Tarantino at work, and people were saying that I was sitting next to said that it was one of their favorites, and I realized I hadn't watched it since it like came out on DVD. So I felt like rewatching it because I've seen Kill Bill a bunch, and I've seen Pulp Fiction a bunch, which are my other two favorites. So I thought, oh, let's see if this one stands up. I thought I was going to do Django Unchained, but from what I've read, it doesn't stand up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's... At the same time, there's something to Quentin Tarantino that, like, we... Like, you can take it or leave it. My issues with him is he is pretty... he likes to use the F word. And sure, there's, like... The F word specifically, not fuck, but specifically targeted towards those who are homosexual, and utilizes that without to kind of build out a character or to provide color to the character without actually providing much to the scene itself. Like that, I feel like there's ways around what his characters are trying to get at, that he doesn't need to use kind of that terminology. But a lot has been written about his use of the N-word as well. And so kind of what it ultimately comes down to is like he's going to continue using it because he feels like it's appropriate for his characters.
Well, and he likes to push buttons push norms, yeah. Which – I also it just bothers me. Like, it feels like he's pushing them just to push them, and he has this stage in which he can, and it's just, like, it, to me, is just really frustrating.
Okay.
It feels cheap, like, it doesn't need to be the word of choice. There's no reason for it other than it's going to push buttons for his audience.
Yeah, and he definitely likes to use that to evoke reaction.
Yeah.
So it'll definitely be and also moving on, it'll be interesting to see he has a film coming out, I think, later this year. He's also been briefly in talks with possibly doing the next Star Trek.
Which would be very different.
Yeah, that would be a huge departure for him, and I'd be interested to see what he does with something like that, just because it would be so different for him.
Do you think they'd make him work within the restrictions of a PG-13 film?
No. early conversations was that it would still be R.
Wait, I thought Star Trek been R?
No. I don't think so.
Oh, so this would be, it would be a change then. Because it's like when they added Deadpool, where it was like, no, they're going to do Deadpool the way Deadpool should be done, so it's going to be R-rated, even though it's a superhero film in a franchise that is normally PG-13.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I mean, I don't know if it fits as... I love it for superhero movies, just for something different, but I don't know if it's necessary for Star Trek. Star Trek doesn't need the R rating.
Yeah, I agree.
It's also out of character for a Star Trek film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For what it's typically known for.
Right.
Anyway.
Which is family fun and values.
Is that?
Is it?
It's definitely trying to pass on some values. Not necessarily family values. Family fun and values.
Okay.
I think it's also like ethical. Like it's a good... base to phrase ethical conundrums and things like that and talk about how time travel can affect things. And I think it's a good canvas to talk about that.
And also saving the whales.
Saving the whales. Very important.
Very important.
Going back
to San
Francisco,
they covered it once
in the '80s or whatever. That's a weird film.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
My personal favorite.
That's your personal favorite?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask my mom about it.
Okay.
She'll tell you how many times I made her watch it.
Oh, probably a bunch.
A lot.
We need to watch that at some point. Star Trek Beyond is also really good, though. But all this What's that?
I need to finish it. Anyway, I want to get past all the intro stuff so we can talk about the movie.
Yeah. So all this is to talk about. All this Quentin Tarantino talk both sets up our meal, which is an homage to him through a variety of film history. And you can head to getmunchedup.com to read more about that. So that kind of sets us up to jump into Inglourious Basterds, okay, cool. Which real quickly, our rules... drinking rules, that is, for that film was drink when someone is shot, which happens a fair bit.
In bursts.
No. So, yeah. Like, be prepared to drink. Drink when a Nazi is scalped. And finish your drink during that one Hitler scene.
Wait, what was the Hitler scene?
The one where he just is continuously shot by the machine gun. Yeah. And he has, like...
it slowly kind of disintegrates.
Like, yeah, he's like falling apart.
That was it?
That's it.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be something very different.
What did you think it was going to be?
Hitler enacting something on someone else.
Okay.
No, I thought if it, because you guys were like, ahaha, that one Hitler scene, like you made it seem like it was going to be something like weird.
It was weird.
It's a little weird.
Hitler didn't die in a movie theater. And yeah. It's like, no, again, but it's like, not outrageous.
Weird. It's not weird from Tarantino. Like, it was expected. Like, it was gratuitous violence.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's,
I think,
it's
just in my
alternate history.
Yeah.
When you said that one Hitler scene, I thought it was going to be like he does something really weird and you're like, what is going on? Why is Hitler doing that?
Okay, that's fair. I think. Okay.
And now that I realize it, I completely forgot about that rule because nothing in the film tipped me off to think to myself, this must be the Hitler scene.
Huh. That's interesting.
You didn't... okay.
Andre, maybe...
it's just that, like, there couldn't be a Hitler scene after that. Because...
but I guess that one doesn't necessarily, like, indicate anything. Which, to be fair, we were trying to hide what that experience was. And also my
you
first...
you did a very good job. I had no idea.
My first experience watching this film... that Hitler scene kind of held a lot of weight. And,
oh, same.
And so I figured it would have its impact when it happened, but...
oh, I just kind of assumed Hitler was going to die.
That's an interesting assumption to make.
It wasn't surprising to me. When that happened, I just kind of thought, well, we're finally here.
I mean, they set up for it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I laughed out loud when I saw it the first time. It was like so...
you laughed?
Yeah.
Was it in a theater setting?
Yeah, it's like meant to be outrageously comical. Like, you don't...
This film plays its laughs in a different way. It does not hit with everyone.
I laughed in this film.
Well, it's... You laugh at yourself in a way for not expecting that... to happen, and it happened so gratuitously. It's like it's almost like that, like Ben said, the building of tension and then the like exhalation of it and the laugh, like, oh, like, wow, that is not...
I wonder if the experience of watching it in a theater is just very different from watching it at home.
I could see that as well.
Yeah
because in a theater the tension builds a little bit better because you can't take breaks. You can't turn and talk to your friend. You're forced to just experience it on your own.
You
in
haven't
silence.
Had 17 drinks.
We didn't have 17.
Okay,
drinks.
More like 7.
You had more than us.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I
that was
did you feel drunk
choice.
That night?
You definitely I did got because a little by sleepy. The end of the night you were curling up on the couch and I thought you were gonna fall asleep and I was about to get real mad.
I bet you were really.
It was
close.
A long movie and you I was really.
Close. You picked it.
Well, I mean that's look, fair.
I it was also didn't his think birthday. That we were. I didn't think that we were going to be starting the movie at like 9 o'clock at night.
We had a busy day.
Well, we had to make that damn strudel.
Oh, yeah, that damn strudel.
That was a surprise for people who read the blog. Okay, this
you
was
can find
a fun
out how the strudel turned out
on getmunchedup.com.
Yeah, check it out.
I thought this would be a fun way to go through the movie.
Let's hear it.
Let's go chapter by chapter.
Do you even remember all the chapters?
Yes, I sure do.
Fortunately, he has
chapter one was Once Upon a Time in Nazi or occupied France.
Real quick, so my viewing experience, I don't necessarily break it up into chapters. There's almost not enough time to reflect in between chapters. So I still view the film as largely a whole arc, and I can't remember what happens specifically in each chapter.
Well, let's find out. Let's try.
So, let's go through this.
Okay. This chapter I do remember.
Hard to forget.
This might be the best chapter.
Oh, without a doubt. This is the most memorable chapter for me. So this is the chapter where, in which Hans Landa... Landa, is that right?
Yep. Landa.
Hans Landa...
Hans Landa.
...drinks 2 glasses of milk and has a very charged conversation with... a man harboring a Jewish family beneath his floorboards.
And there's a couple of very clever things that happen.
Let's go through those because there's a ton.
One that I appreciated was they're speaking in French. And then like partway through the conversation, Hans is like, I've exhausted my French. Is it chill with you if we speak in English? And you as a viewer, like my original thought at least was, oh, they're just doing this so that we don't have to read subtitles anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then partway through that conversation, Hans is like, the only reason the Jewish people you're hiding haven't reacted is because they don't speak English.
Yeah.
And you realize all along that he knew exactly where they were. He knew exactly what was up. And you just realize what a stone cold killer Hans is.
Yes, I agree with you.
How smart he is.
Yes. And also just Christoph Waltz, multilingual, going into this movie.
Actually, a lot of the actors were.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that I thought Tarantino did a good job of, was hiring actors who actually spoke all of the languages that were expected of them.
Yeah.
Or at least could play it off well enough. Like, I don't
know. Like Brad Pitt's Italian. Chef's kiss.
Just beautiful. Perfection.
It wasn't supposed
Molto
to be.
Bene.
So the other thing about that was I love he doesn't say is it chill if we talk in English. He's like, and now I must regretfully inform you that I have reached the end of my little understanding that I have of French. Like he says it in a very eloquent way where it's like, you're definitely more comfortable with French than this guy is with English, and this is a power play. You're in this guy's house, but you're kind of controlling
which
him.
Is what he sets, like he ingratiates himself on multiple occasions as a way of making the person across this table assume they have the power in that situation by like saying like, oh, this is your house, can I have this milk, oh, this, like, he hits on that point multiple times as a means to kind of set that relationship up and ultimately who owns the power in that moment.
Or where he smokes his pipe and the other guy says, is it okay if I smoke my pipe? And he's like, oh, it's your house.
Do whatever you want. And then later on he's like, well, now I would also like to smoke my pipe. And he takes it out and it's this comically large, very elaborate pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing I liked about that scene, if we're continuing to unpack it.
Let's unpack it.
So there's a famous, my coworker's really into the one who was telling me he really liked this movie. And this was a quote he brought up. Come back to me. I need to remember the name of this director.
Jean-Luc Godard.
No. The guy who's known for, like, thrillers and suspense and...
Alfred Hitchcock?
Hitchcock, yes. Hitchcock had a quote along the lines of, two people are sitting at a table, the table blows up, you'll shock the audience for 5 seconds. Two people are sitting at a table, show the audience the bomb under the table, and they'll be sitting in suspense for 5 minutes while they're waiting for it to go off. And they, like... really explicitly do that. They show the two of them having this conversation about Jewish families that are missing from this region. And then the camera goes below the table underground and you see the Jewish family hiding underground. Then it goes back up and the conversation just becomes even more charged to you as the viewer, knowing that there's a bomb under the table.
Yeah.
I thought that was really well done.
And then ultimately this chapter resolves with Shoshana running away and the rest of her family being shot to death beneath kind of the Nazis above. And I think there's kind of one specific point I want to call out here is that the idea of being trapped and ultimately reaching your death in that moment, and how that happens to Shoshana's family, and then ultimately how that will play out later on as almost a reversal of that moment.
Yeah. Chapter 2, Inglorious Bastards.
This is just the introduction to them, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was the name of the title.
Yeah, this was fine.
It was fine?
Yeah.
I loved the, like, character card introductions. Like, when one of the named members like of Inglorious Bastards would come up.
Moment.
Yeah, it would, like, show him and, like, slap his name on the screen with a guitar riff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really playful and fun.
Yeah, I almost wish they played with it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just because it starts to, like, break into the idea of this band of heroes being
almost like comic book heroes.
Yeah, and over heroes. The top.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And being able to kind of overcome impossible feats. And then kind of just you start to lose some of that momentum a little bit just as a result of – and this is probably completely purposefully, but you start to lose a little of that momentum when you learn more about the characters themselves.
Yeah.
An example of this is setting up this idea of who he's referred to in the film as the Bear Jew and his storyline. And he's kind of created as a bear, as his name, the Bear Jew, he's somewhat of an artifice for who he actually is, because when you actually get to know him, he's a little awkward. He's not as, like, cool. He doesn't play it as cool as you would expect based off of the tall tales that have very specifically been told about him.
Right.
And how that travels to Hitler and things like that. And the film definitely plays with that, but it ultimately left me a little flat. Even though the idea – I'm really interested in the idea of it and playing with that expectation versus reality. But this is also a group that you somewhat want to cheer for and root for, whether or not you end up doing so by the end of the film is kind of different.
Which I will get to in the final chapter.
Yeah.
Again, purposefully. Anything else you want to say?
This chapter was utterly forgettable. I don't remember anything other than Brad Pitt. Talking to a bunch of people.
How does this chapter end? What's the end?
They carve a swastika into the guy's face after that whole speech.
That happens in this. That's kind of a long chapter.
Not the Christa. Not the Christoph Waltz one. The other guy who goes talk to Hitler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
This whole scene was them. It was also a one scene chapter. Them in the valley talking to the guy, and they say at the end, which I thought was really memorable. Like, now you're going to go home and you're going to take off that uniform, aren't you? And he says, yes. And Brad Pitt says, well, I don't like that, because people need to know you're a Nazi. And he just carves the swastika into this guy's face.
I think that was when I started feeling uncomfortable with the bastards.
And I think that's fair.
Because I couldn't reconcile in my mind. I was like, I think the movie wants me to enjoy this and think it's funny because they're Nazis, so they don't matter. But then the other part of my brain was like, they're still torturing people, murdering people, scalping people, disfiguring people.
I think you're supposed to think.
Yes, they're Nazis, but I felt super – I could not reconcile the two in my mind, and so I just never knew how to feel about them.
I think that's kind of
– purposeful.
Purposeful, definitely. Because – and again, this kind of comes into play in the final chapter, but you're supposed to, in the final chapter, it's pretty explicit that you're supposed to, like, re-examine how you've been watching the movie and who you've been cheering for, as the Germans are in a theater cheering for their hero. You realize you've been doing the same thing the whole movie? Does that...
No, because I wasn't cheering for anyone.
Okay.
Except maybe Shoshana.
Okay. Who also wanted to... ended up murdering the entire theater of people who were cheering while watching someone murder people. Like, I think that was...
But not in the same way. There was a pleasure with which the bastards were mutilating people that Shoshana didn't have. Like, there was a maliciousness there, whereas Shoshana had revenge motivation. She had political motivation because she knew she had everyone she needed under one roof. It's very different to me. The means, even though they were both killing people, the means and the style in which it happened were very different.
Yeah, which, interesting to hear that was your take. I felt they intentionally chose Nazis as the villain in this movie because they are, like, the one of the few groups that is pretty much universally reviled.
At one point.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I wonder how this movie would play over if it came out now.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Nazis are somewhat in the public eye these days. And they're, whether we like to, I mean, there's been a resurgence in being public about wearing Nazi-affiliated paraphernalia and things like that. So it's like, and Nazism and fascism as a whole is something that, like, I am comfortable being vociferously against and also being violent towards, because they are not going to give someone the time of day to enact. Like, they're just going to enact their ultimate how they view the world, and what they and how they view the world does not include people like me, people of color, large minority groups, anyone that does not fit in their mold. So it's like a, and so I think that kind of comes back to some of the tension that I have with this film itself, that I can't necessarily reconcile one way or another. And I think you were getting at, Andre, was like, he chooses Nazis because they're reviled. And so you're supposed to have a specific position.
It's supposed to be easy to hate them.
Yeah. Right. And so that ultimately when there's this moment when they are kind of slaughtered in this theater and have no sense of defense or anything overcome that, it's like, yeah, well, a lot of people in that theater probably, like, I mean, I guess 300 deaths to the millions of Jews and gay people and those that were disabled and the inhumane things that were performed on them and the live vivisections and, like, I don't know.
I don't think you're supposed to feel bad for them in that scene, though. Like, that, I think what you're supposed to do is examine as an audience the fact that you enjoyed that scene so much, what that says about you.
I guess I didn't necessarily enjoy it, though, either. Like,
yeah.
Well, I didn't enjoy it or feel bad about it. I just, what bothered me was that I felt like the movie was trying to make disfigurement funny, and even though it's, or just the brutal murders of Nazis funny, and I get that. I mean, screw Nazis, like, Nazis suck, they're horrible, I hate them, I'm not bothered by the group that was killing Nazis who were bad people. What bothered me was more just, I didn't want to find that funny, and I didn't, like, it kept, you know,
like, maybe not funny is the right word, but, like,
satisfying.
Yes. Happening. Satisfying.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble describing why it made me uncomfortable. Or not uncomfortable, but just, it was one note.
I think also kind of over the past year and things like that, things that have happened, whether that be kind of what happened in Las Vegas and kind of the opportunity for violence specifically related to guns and how that is somewhat charged now. And the idea of someone sitting and shooting into a crowd of people.
Yeah.
And how that happened in Las Vegas or the Pulse nightclub and all these other moments, it affects kind of how I view it. I just don't enjoy it specifically. And I'm not creating a connection that, like, on-screen violence begets outward, like, violence out in the world. But I think that moment now holds a different meaning than maybe it once was. And because of the prevalence of actual violence like that in our world.
I think this came out the same year as the like Dark Knight movie theater.
Did it really?
Well, I'm thinking this movie came out when I was in, I think it came out when I was a senior in high school. And I think The Dark Knight came out when I was like a junior or senior in high school. So very close. I remember thinking about that around the time I watched this movie once, like, wow, that happened at a theater.
3 years after Inglourious Basterds.
3 years after. Okay. Yeah, that must have been on a rewatch. Okay. Yeah.
I guess I also just, I don't buy into the whole an eye for an eye. Like, yeah, Nazis did really horrible things. They murdered a lot of people. They did much worse than murder people. And seeing the bastards do that is supposed to be like, you know, well, they deserve it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't sit right with me to, you know, lower to be at the same level as the person you're trying to punish.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, what's more satisfying is seeing a movie where the hero finds a way to like still punish the bad people, but to rise above it in some way. That's more satisfying to me personally.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I imagine Quentin Tarantino is just not interested in telling that kind of story.
No, because he loves revenge stories.
He does. Yeah. He does.
Yeah, and I think kind of our conversation around that scene specifically kind of talks to somewhat the charged nature of that scene and how each of us kind of brings our own experiences to viewing it, and how that there's something interesting there because it is clear it's a conversation point for all of us. And our viewing experience for that scene differed so greatly that there's at least something interesting there.
It's, yes, definitely thought-provoking. And conversation-inducing.
Yeah. We could talk about the fourth chapter.
Well,
which sets up tension
for we skipped chapter three, German Night in Paris.
German Night in Paris.
Is that's that the where they have the
bar?
Huh?
Is that the bar?
No, no, that's chapter four. Yet. Chapter three was Shoshana's chapter, where you realize she's alive, she owns a theater.
She
eats the strudel. She has another charged conversation with
Hans Landa,
who just owns every scene that he's in.
Yes.
He's very good.
Yes.
Christoph Waltz is very good.
He's definitely the most memorable part of this movie.
Yeah, he's the only one that won an award too, right?
Yes, he got an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
Well deserved. I feel good knowing that. He really did a wonderful job.
Yes.
He was very good.
He did. Yes. Not much else to say about that one, I guess.
No.
Operation.
It's around here that the film slows down for me.
Slow down quite a bit. Yes,
like I agree with you on that. Scene with Mike Myers' shirt sets up Michael Fassbender's character.
I was so checked out. Yeah, I could not.
You kept saying things along the lines of, "This is why this movie's 2.5 hours long."
Yeah,
came out about 17 times, which is fair, but it's also
I wasn't wrong.
Yeah. The whole, like, yeah, I don't know. The emotion he's going for most often is tension.
I get it. Yes. I know you're gonna rebut this is why this movie is 2.5 hours long with, he's building tension. There's a way to build tension in 2 hours.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
There was a lot of lengthy dialogue that just could have been cut. I don't think Quentin Tarantino is really into editing. I think he's just kind of like, got it in one.
I wrote all of it. Let's keep it.
Yeah. It's meant to be there.
I think he also has.
Yeah, you could at least lose 15, 20 minutes out of this movie and be fine.
And be
a tourship at this point to like have complete control over his edits.
Right.
That like, I don't think anyone's going to tell him no.
I don't know if that's a good thing though. It was too, like, because the tension almost gets lost at a certain point because you're like, wait, what are we even building tension towards? Oh, right. This has happened. Like, it just.
Yeah.
I mean, there's mine. Yeah. Yeah. I agree, but I also can like vocalize the understanding of building like micro moments of tension to build to a larger tension.
Yes.
Like the idea of building, like there's micro moments within the bar scene itself.
Yes, I and really that, like the bar scene.
And that everything that happens there slowly builds up and amps up. And the ultimate result of that is an increased amount of tension for the scene that comes after that. So while that scene itself is very long and takes its time, and it loves to just slowly build up its tension, it does take a while to get there.
True. I do it. That one's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Just it gives you you're building tension. You think you're past it. Oh no, you weren't past it.
Okay. Just to be clear, I'm not saying the movie has to be an hour and a half.
I know.
No, a 2 hour movie. A two. No, hour
I get that. I agree. Bastard. I agree.
There's 2 hours would be fine. 2 hour movie in here.
Right.
That still would have built tension.
Yes, and I agree with you.
Yes,
we're not arguing on that.
And I would have had half an hour of my life back. So
yeah,
win.
Yes,
everybody wins.
Yeah, I like the bar scene. That's. I'm just wondering if there's any other chapters we really want to go over. Revenge of the Giant Face. This is where Londa has the Cinderella moment. He slides the shoe onto.
Yeah, that's the right intention there.
Yeah. Hammer Smark's foot.
And then chokes her out. Which
yeah, that was
also
not
just
fun to watch.
Also with like the knowledge that Quentin Tarantino in previous films that had something similar used his own hands to do that for on what is typically the actress. It just like makes my viewing experience with that like again somewhat more charged because I'm sure I'm bringing extra stuff into this and how like Uma Thurman wasn't always safe on the set of Kill Bill and things like that and just Quentin Tarantino's like, it's not common for a director to want to be the hand model in a choking out scene. Like, there's something uncomfortable about that.
One hand, it's the auteurship. Like, he didn't trust anyone else to do it. On the other hand, yeah, I see where you're coming from. Like, it's a little weird. Feels like, he like wrote that in. He said, I wanted to do it. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I get that.
And so that just added just one extra element to that scene. Just leaves me a little unsettled, and I just wanted to quickly bring that up.
Also like one of the deciding reasons why I did not pick Kill Bill was I just felt like it was a little too soon after the Uma Thurman.
Yeah, we would have a full conversation.
Yeah,
about that,
which
that's for sure.
Yeah, this whole thing.
And that kind of
it was
up that
it was well
what
one thing we immediately off the bat noticed was. It was weird to see the Weinstein Company opening up. First thing you see, you push play, noticing. Weinstein Company.
They
like,
said it
twice. Yeah.
I feel like that's just going to happen with kind of any film of theirs that we go back and watch now.
Like, he made a lot of movies. Weird. Weinstein made a lot of movies. He did a lot of bad movies, things, too.
Oh, a ton of bad things.
We on Munch are very anti Harvey Weinstein.
Thank you for coming out and saying that.
Yes.
Just to clear
anti-Nazi, that anti-Weinstein.
We shouldn't have to, but oh man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole weird thing. What else do we have?
It was a weird experience to see that at the front.
It was.
It's also weird. Usually something like that happens, and you as a consumer have some power to be like, well, I'm not going to buy that anymore. You know, I'm going to vote with my money kind of thing. And it just – it's one of those things where it feels like it's going to be hard to avoid.
Yeah.
Well, he already lost his company, so.
I know that. But it's still – it's like it's weird to – watch and rent something that came from something so horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all.
And you can't help that think that the actresses specifically on that movie might have had some kind of experience with him or some interaction with him that was unpleasant for them and how that impacted their careers.
Yeah, but you're still going to watch the movie because...
And you also understand that there was a lot of other talented people that are good people.
Oh, sure.
Who worked on these films and fought for kind of great artwork.
Yeah.
And it also shows that, like, when you consolidate power to that extent, how much that can taint so much other good work.
Right. So far-reaching. So what's the next chapter?
That was it.
That was the last chapter?
Yeah, the last chapter was, like, the last hour of the movie. It was all the everything.
I thought there were more chapters for some reason.
I thought so, chapters. But that's where the fandom.com summary of chapters ended.
Well, if fandom.com ends there, we know it's over.
Yeah. So, overall thoughts.
Overall thoughts.
I did not enjoy watching it. I felt...
Did you have any other points on that you wanted to make, Lana?
Not really. I mean, I kind of said them as we went along. After the movie, I felt like I needed to process what it was I didn't like about it, because as I was watching it, I just felt kind of a general, I am not having a good time feeling, which is very similar to how I felt about Children of Men. Okay. To go back to, I think, our last podcast, where I just kind of needed a second to figure out, why did I feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I've figured that out, but...
Okay.
It was one of those films where I acknowledged the parts of it that were good as I was watching it. Like, there were definitely scenes where I was like, Christoph Waltz is so talented, or, wow, this is a really great set that they've built here, or just, that's a really good bit of dialogue. But overall, my feeling as I was watching it was just, when is this going to be over?
Yeah, it didn't, I mean, and again, having a lot of, it was a long day for us. Mm-hmm. We had a lot to drink, and it was a very long movie.
Oh,
please. I had, like, one drink more than you guys did.
I don't think I ever felt drunk that day.
Debatable.
Did you feel tired?
No, not particularly.
Okay. Not like you.
I get really tired if I start a movie after 8.
I do. We do need to.
And you say, don't fall asleep, and I say, I'll try. It's not like I choose, like, I think I'm just going to take a nap. It's like, but I half an hour to keep my eyes open.
When we said, don't fall asleep, you said, I'll try, like, I'll try.
No, I did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you really did. Because Ben and I both looked at each other like, he's definitely going to fall asleep.
I felt like you guys.
You did not convince us at all when you said, I'll try. I stayed awake. There was a shrug in your voice when you said, I'll try. You did a good job,
Andre. You stayed awake.
Thanks, guys.
You also didn't set yourself up to win because you curled up on the couch with a blanket over you. Like...
I mean, can you blame him?
Prime napping position.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. It was a busy day. It was his birthday munch. You know, that only comes once a year.
It does.
If you can also have like a really nice nap at the end of that, why not?
If
you can have everything.
It's your birthday.
I've fallen asleep in movies I haven't wanted to fall asleep in.
That's
you never want to fall asleep in a movie.
Sometimes you do.
The only time I was happy to fall asleep in a movie was... whatever the last Star Trek movie was.
Star Trek Beyond? Star Trek Beyond's really good.
I thought it was fine. It was the day after our wedding when we watched it.
Yes,
and I was
that's
like,
not a good time to watch
I'm here
it.
To relax. But it's I'm very relaxed right now. I had an excellent nap. That was relaxing. And I got what I wanted out of that 2 hours. So.
All right. Well,
I should watch it again, though.
You should watch it again. And also watch it with the lens of it is Justin Lin,
Yeah.
Director who kind of brought Fast and Furious from a pile of ash and rebirthed it and gave it new life. And
have a coffee beforehand.
Because when you start thinking about it in that
context,
certain things within the film itself make sense.
Okay.
But I think also the film itself is just a wonderful joyride at times.
Nice.
Good one.
Yeah, there's just some specific scenes in that film that I absolutely love, and I think it's on some of the most powerful moments in recent film.
Well, I'm on spring break, so we should try to watch as many movies as possible.
Is that a good segue into our next segment? What are some movies you watched? Or do you have another name for
it? Wait, do you have a name for it, Ben?
I don't.
Are you still workshopping
it? We need to come up with a name. We need to come up with a good munch.
Let's go. Working. What are some movies you watched? Working title.
That cannot be the end.
It's a working title.
All right. Well, we need to work on that this week. We should come up with something. Sure. I'll start this out. I just watched G.I. Joe Retaliation. Which on the surface.
Pork chop sandwiches.
What?
I think there's a YouTube video in which it features G.I. Joe animation.
And I've showed it to you many times, and every time you're like, that's actually really funny.
It's really weird.
It is. All right. You watch G.I. Joe, PSAs.
So G.I. Joe Retaliation, which is the sequel to the original G.I. Joe.
Did you watch the original one?
Yes, I've seen the original one.
Oh, okay.
It was in preparation for G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Okay.
That I watched it a while ago. because on the surface, it looks to be the perfect schlocky action film that you want to like just
sit down. It has The Rock in it.
It has The Rock.
It's La Rocky.
It has Channing Tatum.
It has The Rock in it?
CT.
It has The Rock in it. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
What?
Yeah. And Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Like, that's like a dynamite duo right there. Also Bruce Willis.
That's like 500 pounds of muscle in one room.
And the trailer just looks ridiculous enough that you're like, okay.
Wait, I feel like you're leading up to being like, it wasn't good.
It was a 5 out of 5.
It's not good.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's a 5 out of 10.
It's honestly one of the worst films I think I've seen.
Oh, my
Spoiler alert. Not only does Channing Tatum die in the first 10 to 15 minutes.
10 to 15?
He's barely in this film.
He's on the cover.
Yeah.
They bill it as a Channing Tatum movie.
He's there just to pass the torch off to The Rock, which really sucks.
No.
Ben, one of the worst parts. I know.
Why didn't
you
just turn it off? Like
I should have.
You should have.
Because it doesn't
you
get
vote
better.
With your
because
dollar.
From
you
there.
Vote with your play button.
Vote with your play button.
From there, you're following 4 or 5 people that you don't care one iota about.
So they're all brand new. Channing Tatum's the only like returning character.
Pretty
And they
much.
Kill him off.
I mean, there's some returning characters like Shadow Strike and
Shadow Strike.
Classic.
That other ninja.
Right, the other ninja. Guy. He was good.
He got and the he rest got nominated for supporting actor, right?
Probably.
For sure.
Bad
His abs
good
probably
actor.
Did at least.
For G.I. Joe 1, not Retaliation.
He was better in Retaliation. Are we talking about Shadow Strike? Who are we talking about?
We're talking about the other ninja guy.
The other ninja guy.
Ray Liotta?
Yeah.
Is it Ray Liotta?
I don't know.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. You tell me.
I remember from the
He's a common action dude.
Yeah.
He likes his action set pieces. He played Darth Maul.
Okay.
Same guy.
Nice.
Same dude.
Nice.
But don't watch G.I. Joe Retaliation, please. It's not a good experience.
It's a really good hot take.
You heard it from me. I know we at Munch love a bad action film. G.I. Joe Retaliation is just a bad action film. Not a bad action film.
Got it.
Oh, well.
Very clear.
I'll skip it.
All right. Leanna, hit me up. What have you been watching?
I mean, I'm gonna do this for both of us because we just watched it together. But
hopefully, you didn't want to say something, Andre, because she's just
no, she's just gonna speak for me, I guess.
Surprise, surprise.
Go for it.
We just watched Girls Trip. It was so good.
Yeah, it was really good.
It's such a good film.
I did not realize how short.
Not short. Short's the wrong word.
Small.
Jada Pinkett Smith.
She's a
tiny lady.
She is very small.
She's just a very small lady. Like
petite.
Perfectly proportioned, beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Just when you see her side by side with any other person, you realize what
she's a tiny, petite
person she is.
Do you think... So after I watched this film, I had to think about Jada Pinkett Smith as a character in a person in a way that I hadn't before. And she did such a good job in the role in Girls Trip that I kind of think that is kind of just who she actually is.
Well, then she was acting real hard in Magic Mike because that was a completely different character.
Yeah. And
she owns the room in Magic Mike.
Yeah. And I think that's like, and so I can't decide if that's just like actually who she is and she's just kind of leaning into who she is a little bit. or if, I mean, I'm not saying she's not a good actor, because she is a good actor, but there was just something a little more natural about her performance here that makes me think that that's how she actually is as a person.
Is there a documentary about her? Maybe we could learn a little bit more about her.
The Jada Pinkett Smith story?
Oh, I would watch that. I would watch it.
It was fun, though. Willow and Jaden are in it?
Maybe.
So.
Definitely.
There's a lot of pee. A lot of pee jokes in that movie.
There is.
There's one extended pee joke in that movie.
I love the excessiveness to which they go in that scene. It is over the top in a way that is fun and also somewhat disgusting.
Ugh, it was so – the movie was so good.
The film is very good. I enjoyed it more than Bridesmaids.
I loved all the scenes because they felt like a more natural group of friends. Yeah. And all the scenes where they're just out partying and they're doing the kind of cell phone video or like selfie stick video of them. It felt like the four of them really did just get really wasted and party in New Orleans.
Yeah.
And they managed to stay in character while drunk.
Yes.
Because that, I don't know, it felt like an authentic drunk, an authentic group of friends. And I loved it. I just thought it was so fun.
And also the emotional moment at the end is kind of very impactful in a way that, like, you're not surprised that it's happening, but it still is effective.
Yeah. I also texted like three of my friends as we were watching it, and I was like, I just really want to go on a girls' trip. I love you guys. Miss you.
Oh,
that's really cool.
I have a girls' trip coming up this weekend, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Well, we have board games planned.
Hey.
And potentially Iron Giant.
And potentially cooking. Boys' night.
Boys' night.
Boys' night.
Hashtag boys' night.
Well, I guess my movie to talk about is Sicario, because we also watched Sicario this weekend. It wasn't really what I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting, but the soundtrack was really good.
Not this.
I liked it. I liked it. I didn't love it. I wouldn't watch it again.
Okay, that's good, because that's good to know.
Yeah.
I heard really good things about it.
It's obviously a good movie. Like, you watch it and you're like, this is a good movie. I think I like it. I don't love it. I don't think I'd watch it again.
I find it funny that it's associated with that director, Denis
Villeneuve. Yeah.
When they advertise his other films, they're always like, director of Sicario. Like, it's something that he should be super, super proud of. And if you see Sicario attached to something, you should get excited. Because after watching this film, I would not go see the next film that was billed as being similar to or in the same vein as or whatever Sicario. Because I found it to be very
frustrating. I feel like we just watched like three really tense movies in a row, and you didn't like any of them, and you should pick the next movie to watch. Children of Men, super tense. Yeah. You didn't like it. Sicario, super tense. You didn't like it.
Man, I'm sorry. I'm being a negative Inglourious Nancy. Bastards. Am I being a negative super, Nancy?
I guess you just it's a type of movie you don't like.
That's okay. I have some thoughts.
That's completely okay.
Well, we're going to watch Iron Giant, which, you know, that movie's probably going to be kind of heavy, too. What's after Iron Giant?
I don't think it's going to be that tense. We don't have anything on the calendar.
Yeah, we need to plan our
calendar. Okay, well, maybe it's time for the series that I want to do, you guys.
I think that'd be a lighthearted and fun series.
Those aren't going to be very tense at all.
Little do you know.
Da-da-da.
Does that kind of wrap it up
I think that wraps it up.
All right. Well, this has been another episode of the Munch Podcast. Hopefully the audio quality was good this time. If so, we need to figure some things out.
Yeah, we've been wearing a blanket on our heads for the past hour.
I've been sweating for the past half hour.
Yeah, I'm super excited to listen how good this is, though. You can find our...
Because the water heater kicked on this time. I want to see if it picked it up or not.
Ooh,
that's my pet peeve.
Just a little insight into our recording experience.
Yeah. We're trying to make the experience better for you, the listener.
Good day.
Yes.
No. We have to pitch all the places they can talk to us.
Okay. Go.
I like... So you can talk to us at our Twitter account, which is at Get Munched Up, on Pinterest, Get Munched Up, on Letterboxd, Get Munched Up, on Instagram, Get Munched Up, on Facebook, We Are Munch Blog. You can email us at getmunchedup@gmail.com. Finally, we would love to answer any questions you may have, whether they be movie-related, food-related, or about life in general. We are full of answers, whether they're good answers or not. So email us at getmunchedup@gmail.com. And with that, what would your Inglourious Bastards name be if you were probably both Jewish and also in the Inglourious Bastards? And
a lot of what ifs.
But what would your name be? Anyone. Anyone at all.
I'm thinking.
Or what would your weapon of choice be? Either question.
You can also go first, Ben, as an option. Or Leanna.
I would use a bow staff because that's what my favorite Ninja Turtle had.
That's a good one. Doesn't scalp well, but I'll let it
That's
pass.
Not something I would participate in.
He wants his 100 scalps. There's no, you're going, it's not something
I'm gonna
you can't.
I'm going to cut a deal where I'll clear the way for others to do that work.
So everyone else is going to get get your 100 scalps to
him. I'll get assist.
Okay.
So, like, my quota will be 200, but they'll be, like, assist. So, like,
team
each
player.
One. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair. Yeah.
All right. I think my name.
Oh, and then I guess my sorry to interrupt, but to close out, I guess my name then would be the Ninja Jew because it'd be related to the Ninja Turtles.
Not the Ninja Jew.
The Ninja Jew. Yep, that's it.
Oh man.
There you go.
Yeah, that's
you asked,
a good one.
I answered.
I guess I would be. I think I would just use my fists.
Okay.
I think I'm kind
of.
Do
you have like brass knuckles or anything?
No.
Or like just a really big ring that leaves like. Has like a, it's like a calling card, you know? Like it leaves an imprint. Like in that movie. Mm-hmm.
There's only two imprints I leave on them. One with my left fist, the other with my right.
Whoa!
All right. End of story. It's just 1-2 and you're out.
So you'd be the 1-2 Jew.
The 1-Jew. 1-2. I don't know. This is making me very uncomfortable. Andre,
my name doesn't have Jew in it. I'd just be David because my tool would be a sling and I'd hit people in the head with it.
There you go.
And David's already Jewish, so you don't need to add Jew to it.
Not bad.
Nice. Nicely done.
Yeah.
Citing that biblical history.
Jewish. And with that was a conversation. Good day.